Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, YouTube, anywhere, Spotify, you know the deal. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and I'm going to turn the camera around because we have a visual feast tonight. It's been a while since we've had a Fireball show.
I know.
And there's everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Cheers. Here's to a good time.
We have somebody we haven't seen since the pandemic.
It's true.
And somebody we met since the pandemic.
Yes.
Two fascinating friends of ours.
Yes.
Would you say this is in the top 1% of guests we've ever had in our
Absolutely.
In our podcast career?
I think our four, you mean the two guests together or just having Sin?
Well, I'm having Sin. I'm trying to lead into that.
The 4th of July party we had with her.
Nicole can't take a hint, but yeah.
The 4th of July party that we had with her was like one of the top shows of all time.
Right.
That we've done, yes.
And she's back in LA. I haven't seen her in a long time. A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And we mentioned her a couple weeks ago. We reran the show last week. And here she is, the most fascinating person in the world. And unfortunately, the microphone's broken, so I got to do interesting angles to get her. But always a visual feast. Sin Twisted.
Hi.
Hi, Sin.
Hi.
Oh, I'm trying to think the last time I saw you. Which
I know. It's been a hot minute.
It's been so long. Since last time you were on the show, I believe.
Say it's been at least 4 years.
It's been 4 years. Like, yeah, it's been 4 years. The last time you were on the show, I believe, was when we had our old producer, Morgan, had her farewell show, and you gave her a fiery send-off. And then the last time you were in the studio with me and Nicole was when we had Marnie the Wing Girl. And then she was I went on her show, and she said I had zero sex appeal whatsoever. So it was a very nice show. But I want to talk about somebody who has sex appeal, and the man – I'm glad I paired you up with this guy, because the conversation's already been flowing. This man – we met because we went to a premiere about 9 months ago, almost a year, for this great movie, Appetite for Sin, which appropriately enough, which I really liked. And he not only did the special effects, but he was acting. Got to know him. Great guy. He has done so much. And he Terror Toons 2, Terror Toons 3. We went to the premiere of Terror Toons 4. He's been featured on Sci-Fi's Face Off. He's done special effects for almost every one of your movies. And I still have the camera on Sin. I just can't help it. But he's done, and he's just a special effects artist, director. He directed the movie with the most kills of any slasher movies in the Guinness Book of World Records. There he is, Joe Castro.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And, Joe, I thought it appropriate because you asked for water that I got you liquid death.
Yeah,
so that's I'm still trying to get them to sponsor the show, but it's not, I don't know if that's happening. Yeah, there you go. So let me tell you about a real sponsor before we get going, because this conversation is already going crazy. There it is. My favorite energy drink. Ray's energy drink right there. I love it. The best. This is Baja Lime flavor. It tastes like Baja Blast from Taco Bell. And they have great flavors like ginger ale. They have all sorts of fruit punch, all sorts of things. Galaxy Burst, it tastes like Fruity Pebbles. And the best part about it, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. And you can get them at Vitamin Shops or GNCs, because I know Joe's works out. But why pay full price? Go to our code in the description on Spotify, wherever you're listening to us, YouTube, and get 15% off a case of Ray's Energy Drink. So, Nicole, I leave it to you. Who do we start with? Because there's so much conversation that's going to happen.
I think we should introduce Joe's heads.
Okay, we're going to start with Joe's heads. Joe brought a couple heads, which I'm glad you... Oh, look at that. Now, that is a famous head.
That is Bai Ling, the actress Bai Ling.
That is Bai Ling's head. You see that?
From Chad Farron's new slasher masterpiece, Pig Killer.
wait, Pig Killer.
Pig Killer,
oh,
yes.
Okay.
And it stars Jake Busey, and it's the story of Willie Picton, which is an actual serial killer who murdered like countless women in the late 1990s, early 2000s on a pig farm where he used to throw
raids. I watched a documentary about that.
Yeah, and he literally would rape and murder these women, and then he would throw them into a mulch grinder.
I heard they found like almost like over 200 different types of DNA on the farm.
Yeah.
Like he had just been doing it so long. And he would also make sausage for his friends, his neighbors, and it was sausage that was coming from the pigs that were eating the corpses.
Yes.
No, that's extra flavor.
Yeah.
But Bai Ling. Now, you know, you could get, you know, that's almost like a sex toy. You can get a lot of money for that. There's a lot of Bai Ling fans that would love that.
But this is one of my prized possessions. This one here, and then of course we
Before you move off of Bai Ling, How was it molding her head, and how was it working with her?
Oh, she is definitely a truly original kind of gal.
Uh-huh.
Working with her is always an adventure.
How many times have you worked with Biling?
I worked with her 3 times now.
Right.
Yeah. And
it's always an adventure.
Always an adventure.
How so?
Well, you never know what you're going to get. You know, you're going to get happy Biling. You're going to get adventurous Biling. You're going to get don't come near me Biling.
If I ever work with Biling, I have a feeling what Biling I'm going to get. I think I'm going to get don't get near me Biling. But
while I was making a mold of his head, I had the stuff on her face, and she reaches up and puts her fingers into the mold to try to open it. She said, "I can't breathe." And she puts her fingers in her mouth and opens it. I'm like, "Don't do that. You're going to destroy it." But she was talking to me while I was molding her face. And she said she couldn't breathe. I'm like, "You're talking to me. You can breathe."
You have to breathe to talk. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know if Biling knows basic biology, but I love Biling. And this is our friend Mike.
This is Mike Ferguson. Mike Ferguson right there.
Wow.
From Terror Toons 4.
Yes.
He gets decapitated in the film. And
love Terror Toons 4.
Thank you. And he's Max Assassin. He's the new 2022 version of Max Assassin.
Right.
From the first film. And we love Mike. And Mike is a great guy and a great actor.
It looks so similar. It's remarkable.
Yeah. It's, wow. Now how do you get the hair? Is that, did he just shave his back, or how did you do that?
You know, there's a very talented young lady. Her name is Megan Gray.
Okay.
She did all the eyebrow work for me and the mustache work. And, you know, it's hard getting like really good hair, especially if people have like this like salt and pepper kind of gray brown hair. People
yeah.
have all these different hues of hair. It's hard to find wigs. So we just kind of mix it and match it, you know.
But I mean, the beard. How do you get the beard?
This is you know, I find the wigs and I cut them up and we punch in what we can and
the teeth. How do you get the teeth?
No, those are a mold of his actual teeth. Literally stuck the stuff in his mouth and mold his teeth. I've probably done over at least 100 life casts.
Right. Right.
And now I'm at a point where like, what can I do differently? Like, I want to try molding people with their eyes open now. I think I could make it happen.
Wow.
Yeah. But I can mold the inside of the person's mouth while they're having their life cast done and have them breathe at the same time.
How long does that take? How long is it on your face?
Okay. So, you know, a normal life cast, from just asking other people, they'll say anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour. I can have you in and out with under 18 minutes.
That's amazing.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll get some cast made. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to.
I don't want to think what people want to do with my head.
Well, I was gonna say if you need some extra money, go ahead, Sin.
And my teeth.
See? When did you do that? What was that for?
It was a couple years ago, and it's for a project that myself and a few special effects artists were wanting to do, but mm-hmm. it kind of never came to.
Right.
But yeah, it was.
Well, it was during the pandemic. Maybe
no,
they
it
were
before,
just.
It was right
oh,
before
okay.
the pandemic.
I was gonna say
a year or so before the pandemic.
They were just like, we want a live cast of Sin with her mouth open. That's one thing.
No. It was supposed to be. Rock Sexy and Shebop, which were supposed to be the villains from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Rocksteady and Bebop. Okay. But we were doing like full on, like one's going to have a rhino face, another one's going to have like the boar's nose, and you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's just going to be all special effects. So that's why they had to have the teeth done.
Right.
But it was a 2-person job mm-hmm. that did it. So it was like probably about a half hour for me.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
And then a separate time I went and had my teeth cast.
Now, when you looked at your head and saw yourself staring at yourself, how was that?
The first time I saw my head, I actually sat on it. I was like,
that doesn't surprise me. That's Sin twisted for you. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I did that.
So you sat on your own face.
I sat on my own face.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's Sin for you. Well, we're back. Yeah, we're back right in the groove. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Pandemic happened,
yeah.
And I was looking, and first off, I didn't know you sewed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
prior to the pandemic, I've been doing costuming, a lot of it for myself for stage and performances, but
right.
every now and then I get commissions for other people, for Renaissance fairs, Halloween,
mm-hmm.
cosplay conventions, whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So when the pandemic happened, I mean, I had like 3 gigs going on. I was volunteering behind a bar at a swingers club doing that. And I was
we'll get to that. Let me put a bookmark on that one.
I was dancing and performing, and then I was doing seamstress work for, you know, other people for commissions. I
right.
was like at monthly gigs, you know, and pandemic hit and all 3 of those were wiped out.
Yeah.
So, with my sewing, I focused on doing masks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sewed a lot of masks, and I did mine with sewn-in filters, and they were double-sided.
Right.
So you can wash it the next day and flip it over, and there's a different fabric on the other side.
Cool.
Yeah. And you gave away a lot of masks.
And yeah, you can custom order them, whatever you wanted, whatever fabric swatches I had. And then while I was doing that, I was also doing a lot of giving away masks. So pretty much everybody I knew that worked in healthcare, nurses, hospitals, whatever, I just immediately asked them, hey, go through this. Let me know what two fabrics you like and give me your address and I will give you a free one.
That's great.
Just, yeah.
Send save the world.
And then after that, I focused, I think the next two or three donations were for indigenous tribes. For the first one was Navajo Nation, and then I went to the Muscogee Nation. Because Navajo Nation was hit really hard. And for those who don't know, yes, I am indigenous.
Yes, I know.
So,
I don't know what tribe.
Choctaw.
Okay.
Yeah.
My family's Potawatomi.
Yeah, on my mom's side, but I'm not sure my dad's side as far as like that goes.
My mom's side is Potawatomi from I think it's Minneapolis or Michigan.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. Mine's more like the kind of Oklahoma area.
Okay.
Yeah. And after that I started looking for different organizations to donate to.
Right.
Gonna circle back to
I didn't want to step on Nicole's I didn't want to step on her humble brag, but
I was trying to relate.
But also, because I was out of work and stuff like that, I waited 6 months for someone from our club or our club to jump in and be like, "Hey, we got a plan for y'all," but nobody did. So I had people like literally take me under their wing and teach me how to run my own virtual strip club, which I did successfully for 2 years.
Nice.
That's incredible.
I did it weekly. And then after about, just over a year that I, started doing them just once a month. And I was able to, it wasn't like covering people's rent or anything like that, but it was definitely help relieve the stress. It was covering some bills. And it also gave us something to fucking do because a lot of us were going stir crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And initially I just opened the doors to dancers from our club that needed
work, you
know, the assistance. Yeah. And then shortly after that, I started opening the doors to pretty much any marginalized sex workers. So we've had like porn stars on our show. We've had disabled people, amputees, you know, a lot of women of color, you know, we had, I think, two very successful indigenous only shows.
That's great.
With that, you know, a little bit of extra money coming in with that, I was using that for fabrics to,
Now, how are the virtual tips?
The virtual tips were great. The virtual tips were good. And we were able to, I was able to,
And you didn't need any bouncers because nobody was touching it.
Well, we kind of did it ourselves. So I had like a protocol for all my performers to make it to where it was very safe for everyone.
Right.
If you were invited in and you said, yes, I want to do this, the first thing I would do is reach out to you via your DM or email or text or whatever you give me to prefer to reach out. And I would ask, okay, so who am I blocking? You don't need to explain anything.
Right.
Whether it's family members, exes, stalkers, whatever, employee, whatever, let me know their handles and they would be blocked. No questions asked.
That's great.
And then I let them know if for any reason something happens, you have to cancel. Just let me know as soon as I can and I can try and cover someone, but know that you're not going to be penalized for it.
Right.
So I've had dancers who got in a car accident earlier that day and had to cancel out. And it did not affect them getting booked for the next time. That's good. Just be like, let yourself heal and let me know and I'll try and get you in and like see if I can get you in on an extra shift to kind of make up for that loss.
Right.
If people don't know, Sin is an angel.
And I also made sure to, when it came to booking and stuff like that, prioritizing Black and Indigenous, as well as mothers with children, because their schedules are really hard. So I try and prioritize them. Whatever days they have available, I made sure that they kind of got booked first and everyone else is kind of scheduled around that.
Right.
We did have some dancers who are completely flexible. They're just like, put me on call whenever. So that was
No pun intended.
I'm curious.
But it was really good. And through that, I was able to find other organizations because I would ask our dancers, hey, what is an organization that you can help me and I can donate masks to or whatever. So then after that, I started donating to, I gave one donation to Black Lives Matter. I did one to a shelter that was taking care of elderly and mentally disabled folks.
Okay.
Another one for women recovering from domestic violence.
Great.
So I was able to find really good, worthy causes to be able to kind of help participate and just kind of like, here's something for everyone, including the staff and everyone involved. So I think I ended up giving up like maybe over 250 masks.
I saw that.
They're all donations. Yeah. As far as just giving them away. And I had people, I actually set up a small GoFundMe and I was like, hey, if you want to help me help other people, I don't have money. I wish I could do more, but this is all I got. I got a skill. So let's utilize that. So I did have some people who donated money and that like really helped with supplies and shipping and all of that.
I was going to ask, what else did you do in the indigenous community to help like promote like the, just the overall general welfare, I guess.
Initially on my Instagram page, for the first, it got deleted, so I had to restart another one. And the first few years I kept it on private and I was just very active about, highlighting and spotlighting, indigenous issues. And then also just anything that was going on with environmental or, people's rights, you know, being violated.
Because there's been a lot of it over the last 10 years.
And,
sure. There's been a lot of it for hundreds of years.
So for me personally, I was highlighting a lot of the indigenous stuff when they were uncovering all the mass graves in Canada and throughout the U.S. Over 10,000 graves
from
both countries combined, and most of them over residential schools, and also missions and churches as well. You know, so I was spotlighting a lot with that, a lot with climate activists, because a lot of indigenous people, 80% of climate activists are indigenous.
80%?
80%.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was highlighting a lot of that. And then about a year ago, I wanted to open my account to the public. But when you're that outspoken with that, you're going to receive a lot of backlash and stuff. So that's when I separated my accounts and had a private account, which is I'm very active about that and spreading that information, and then just keeping my main profile as what I call a generic shameless self-promotion of like, here's the things I do, here's some modeling stuff, here's this, here's where I'm working. But I do let people know if they want to like see that kind of information and know that kind of stuff, they can follow me on my private account, which is sin.twisted.private.
Exactly.
Is there a voice for the, I don't really know, there's a lot of native tribes in California, aren't there?
There's just a lot of native tribes.
Yeah.
And the problem is that we're not a monolith. So what one person believes from one tribe that may not agree with other people from the same tribe or other tribes.
I hate to go from that to Joe's upbringing, but Joe, now, it's funny because I know you're wearing a polo shirt and you were working today, but usually I see you in some really hot urban cowboy wear, and that now makes sense because you grew up in Texas on a goat farm.
I did. I grew up in Texas on a 55-acre goat farm. And
how was that?
I love goats.
Wait, Sid loves goats.
Goats are so cute. I love it when they scream.
Well, you know.
Really? Could you do a goat scream?
I can't right now. Maybe. So okay. Back up
yeah. After a couple fireballs, yeah.
Why don't you try it now?
Joe, can you? We'll
do it again. Then
we'll see. All right. Let's try it now. Then.
No, I can't do it.
Okay. Can you do a girl scream, Joe? Go ahead, Joe. You've heard it more than any of us.
No, I don't know if I could.
That's cheap. No, okay. Like, see? There you go.
Right? Am I right? I know. It's funny.
Mine would be more like.
Oh, that's pretty good. We'll circle back to that. That's where you got a taste for blood and guts.
Well, you know, I mean, I'd like to keep everything on a positive note, and I just want to say thank you so much for the work that you do for people that don't have a voice, basically.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's very important work. You know?
Yeah.
And I do something similar to that too with independent filmmakers and distribution. I mean, there's many different ways that different people or people that don't have a voice that are being taken advantage of, you know, whether it be indigenous people or, you know, gays or whatever it is, anything.
Yeah. Everything,
so I did know this to get so deep. So what do you do, Joe?
What I do is I run a Facebook group called Movie Distributors to Stay Away From. And why? Because independent filmmakers and independent artists basically are non-unionized. We don't have a union.
Yep.
And the corporate world takes advantage of us.
Yes.
And it's not just filmmakers, it's everybody who's an artist.
Oh, yeah. And no, I fully agree with you.
Well, it's that. Everybody, a, period. Yeah, corporate, corporations take care of everything.
And dealing with producers, right. I fully feel you on that.
But my group solely focuses on getting information to independent filmmakers and how movie distributors basically rob us blind. Mm-hmm. Take advantage of us, and we also show like the techniques that they use to do this. We post actual contracts in group emails, text messages, this sort of thing. But it's all about firsthand experience. Mm-hmm. If you're on Facebook, it's movie distributors to stay away from, and why. There's we have 4 membership questions, and you have to answer them in order to join the group. Mm-hmm. There are no exceptions. Mm-hmm. We don't allow movie distributors in the group. It's only a group of actual filmmakers. I vet everyone very carefully. Anyways, mm-hmm. So I understand and I appreciate the work that you do. And
Thank you.
And I understand also about how when you put yourself out there, how there's always somebody that wants to stop you.
Oh, yeah. It. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And wants to stop your voice. Yeah. And wants to stop the truth from being wrong.
Yeah, and me personally, with the Indigenous community, there's a lot of gatekeeping as well. I'm adopted. I was adopted into a white family, so I was not raised. My identity, my name, everything, language, all was completely erased. So there is this whole kind of thing where it's just like, embrace your culture. And then you try and embrace it. And it's just like, well, you're not Indigenous enough. I'm like, okay, well, blood quantum says this, but then blood quantum is a colonial construct. But then I don't know my native language because something happened to me that I had no choice in.
Right.
And then you're telling me to embrace my culture.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
you can't win. You can't win. They got you in circles.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I saw something recently talking about how Mexicans are dealing with the same thing because Mexicans are Indigenous people. So they're telling Mexicans, embrace your Indigenous culture, but then it's just like, oh, well, you don't speak the language and you're not this. So it's just like, how Indigenous do you have to be? Like, how much knowledge do you have to know? How much blood quantum? You know, I mean,
I haven't done much with the community because I don't feel like I have a right because I'm also Italian and French. So it's like that small part of my mother's background isn't enough, but I also really care about the land of the U.S. Like, I think what we're doing, especially when it comes to water, is just terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would like to have a bigger voice, but I also don't feel it's my place.
Joe, you're smiling. What's so...
The conversation, I so relate to it. And you think, oh, Joe's already a special effects guy. But, like, I grew up on this goat ranch in Lotus, Texas. My real name is Jose Manuel Castro.
Oh, yes.
But I don't speak a word of Spanish.
There you go. Yep.
And my, you know.
Except your name. You just spoke your name.
That's the thing is that you said your name and Mexican, I'm assuming. Yes. But you're speaking Spanish. That's a colonized language. That's like us speaking English right now. That's not actually our actual language. So when people are like, well, you're Mexican, you don't speak Spanish, it's like, that's actually not even our first language.
Right, you're right. That is 100%.
That was a language taken away, so it was enforced upon us, just how English has been over here in the northern area.
But Joe, you just said your name in Spanish. It was pretty good.
But I refused to learn Spanish growing up because, and this may seem like
a... Por qué?
Because I didn't want anything to do with my family.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I was shunned. You know, I knew I was a gay. I was a gay child at the age. I knew I was gay at the age of 2.
Yeah.
2 years old.
Yeah.
I knew
that I was attracted to both when I was a very young child.
Same.
Because Wonder Woman was my first girl crush.
Yeah.
And Michael Jackson, Thriller, pre-thriller, was my first male crush. So I knew that I liked
both women
genders.
Right away. Yeah. Like I date androgynous men. I'm definitely more attracted to women than I am to men, but I like, as we were showing some X-rated things earlier, I like penis. So
yeah.
Oh, we're gonna get to the X-rated things. I'm trying to get the deep conversation out of the way, and then we'll get to the X-rated thing. But you knew you were gay at 2?
Yeah, I knew I was gay at 2. And so everything that I was impressed upon me as a... I mean, I grew up in a town of 1,400 in Helotes, Texas, and I literally did not know that there was another gay person on the planet until I saw Boy George sing Do You Really Want to Hurt Me on MTV.
Amazing.
And that was like 1981, 82. And what happened was I went to a family reunion where I met two of my cousins who were 33 when I was 11. And they knew that I was a troubled youth, you know, and they knew that I couldn't come out. So he recorded, you know, on MTV the song, and he put it at the back of this film, City of the Walking Dead, City of the Living Dead. He said, watch it all the way to the end, watch the after the credits. And I saw this man, this gay man, saying, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me for the first time?
That is really sweet of them to do that. Yeah. For you to see another queer person validates your queerness.
Right. Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was like this number one hit You know, it was like this.
It's huge,
like a birth of myself. You know,
yeah.
I was like the first person in my entire like city county area that I knew who wore, I wore like a culture club shirt to school. Mm-hmm. You know. And, you know, I kind of grew up kind of a bully. I was actually a gay bully in school.
Wait, you were a gay bully?
I was a gay bully.
Were you insecure?
Well, no, not at all, because I was never told no.
Oh.
See, and growing up, my family...
See, I'm straight, and I was told no to a lot, so...
I was physically abused so much as a child, but by the time I got to school... Unless you were beating me,
it's a vicious cycle. Yeah,
I was not afraid of you.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was not afraid of you at all. You know that place between the toilet and the wall, when a toilet is next to the wall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That space is where my mother used to like to get me to kick me in the face.
Oh,
yeah. That was her favorite spot.
Yeah.
You know. Terrible. So you know, I grew up with a mother that was a school teacher, and what she would do was she would wait until she came home from school to take all of aggression from the day on me. Mm-hmm. She would wait till I was naked in the shower to beat me, because you know, that was when I was the most vulnerable.
Exactly.
So then going back to my Mexican heritage and not wanting to learn Spanish, and I said I didn't want anything to do with them, because I didn't want anything to do with it. Here is someone that, like, when I went to hug her or to kiss her, it was like kissing a statue, a cold statue. Like, there was no warmth there at all. You know, I was someone who was supposed to show me love or show me what love is, show me what a relationship is, you know, was. And I'm going to end it with this, because this is pretty dramatic, but then I'll move on to something positive. My father.
Well, I got a segue that's going to move it to something positive. Don't worry about it.
My father caught my mother trying to suffocate me with a pillow when I was about 5-6 years old. And, you know, it kind of warped our family unit.
Yeah.
My mother was this kind of like, you know, there are some birds that when they have two children, they will take the one bird that's the weakest and throw it out of the nest so she can focus on
the other. Did she have like a postpartum depression thing?
I have no idea, but that's like what
my
she
mom
tried to do to me.
Snapped. I wasn't raised by my parents because my mom had too many issues, but it was postpartum depression. I know they can make women drown their own babies.
She tried to drown me. She tried to suffocate me with a pillow. She would choke me to death. She just thought, I don't need this gay child in my life. I have other plans. I just didn't fit into to her plan.
Well, this is not the conversation I had planned on having today, but here's why I'm going to turn it to a positive. You met your husband in Texas.
That's right.
And you're still together after all these years. You and him, and he's an Emmy-winning editor.
That's right.
Steven, right?
Yes.
And you guys fled Texas and moved to LA and became very successful in the industry.
We came out. What happened was...
Well, tell me about meeting Steven for the first time.
I met my husband, Steven, in an edit bay in San Antonio, Texas. And, you know, he also... I lost my father when I was in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his father, too. And they both died of heart attacks. And... my father was my number one cheerleader. You know, he would say, and I say this before, he's like, he didn't care I was gay. He just didn't want me to be picked on. He's like, I don't want you in a position where you're picked on.
So little did he know you were the bully.
Well, you know, I mean, everybody in our family, when people say, what was your family? My family was like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family.
Damn.
Oh, really? Okay. You know? Well,
it's just like, you know, I grew up on a goat ranch with a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw and actively participated in things that no child should ever do.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and if my family were to be listening to this, they probably would have their own perspective of things.
Yeah.
And say, I had this amazing childhood. Oh, Joe's crazy. Yeah, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
No, I
No, I
relate
saw,
to not to the extent of what.
So, you're so you met Steven in an editing bay. I'm trying to bring the romance.
This is what happened. I was making a movie called Legend of the Chupacabra, which is the first Chupacabra feature film.
Nice.
It came out the same year the Blair Witch came out.
Ah.
And it's also a mockumentary. Mm-hmm. And the man he was producing a Tejano music video at the time.
Okay.
And the man that he was working with went to high school with my older brother. They were the same age, so he was 3 years older than me. And he knew that I was gay, and he didn't know if Steven was gay, my husband.
Right.
So he introduced us to see what would happen. And Steven came in and sat next to me in this edit band. I'm editing with this editor. And Steven took out this giant, you know, cell phone in 1997, the big thing like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And big he's like, brick. He was trying to flirt with me. And so he programmed my phone number into his phone, thinking that I would be impressed. Of course, I wasn't even paying attention. That's how I met Steven. And then I really didn't bat an eye on it because I was so into the work. But then 2 weeks later, I was out at a bar and this guy comes walking by and he's like, hey, how's it going? And I said, hey, and I didn't recognize him. And then I realized like 20 minutes later after having a drink or two, oh, that was the guy from the Edit Bay. And I went over and said hello to him and we had so much in common. And we chased the same dream.
Right.
And that's why we came out here to L.A. You know, we kind of did leave San Antonio, but we both have been chasing and now living the same dream for 25 years.
See, that's great. And that's Nicole's dream is to be in a power couple like you guys.
Ooh, it is fun. It's a
My dream has changed a little because my aunt recently broke her leg and she has her husband, my Uncle Dave, taking care of her. And I'm like, I think I want to have a partner that'll just take care of me when I'm old. I want to meet a person who's vegetarian, not necessarily vegan, who believes in ghosts. And I want us to have a partnership and like take care of each other when we're old.
But you did want a power couple for a long time.
I was young and like doing things and being like the it girl of like nothing, because nothing of that matters. It's just the club scene. But like at the time, I did like, I wanted to meet someone that shined, you know? But now I want to meet someone who's sensitive that'll take care of me when I fall down the stairs at the age of 70.
When you say shine, do you mean like the shining, like they can like talk?
Oh, I wish. That'd be so cool.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
No, I mean like people, I have always had an attraction to men that are, and women, that are like socially exuding that, the, you know, that charisma. But as I get older, I'm now looking for someone that just wants to be really into me, that'll take care of me when I need them.
But Steven has that charisma.
Steven is amazing. Yeah. He's been an angel in my life, and he's seen me.
And I also
everything.
Think he would take care of you the rest of your life.
I would hope so. No, but you know, as we move through our relationship after 25 years, people said at 7 years you're going to have done everything once. And then 7 years came, and we're like, okay, I guess we've done everything once. And then at 10 years, we're like, okay, no, there's still more to do. And then at 15 years, we're like, oh my gosh, this is like, we're like a whole new relationship.
That's
and
amazing.
Even at 25 years.
That's like, the relationship you want to have. Is, you never get tired.
Yeah. We live moment by moment, and we just enjoy the adventure as we move forward. But,
and that's what I want. I want someone that'll grow with me and go on adventures with me.
And you know, and things have changed. I mean, it's impossible for two people to have the exact same needs every day, year after year. And, you know, I think part of the fact that the reason why we've been together so long is simply the idea that I am wrong 50% of the time. That's it. I am wrong 50% of the time. And I don't know when that 50% is.
And then the other thing is he's never wrong. He must smell good, right?
Oh, Steven is.
Does he smell good?
Dominic Blush. Of course he does.
Does he smell good? Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to smell good.
He has impeccable taste. You know, before I met Steven, you know, my dress code was, you know, shop rags, you know.
Right.
And then I just lived that way as a special effects artist.
Oh, so he dresses you. So all the cool Western wear is his.
This is his shirt.
Well, there
I
you
came
go.
From his studio. I just came from working today. I was covered in plaster. Plaster down my arm. This is his shirt. I wanted it to be comfortable.
Right.
But, you know.
But when I see you out at the premieres, you always have that good Texas, Western wear.
We got into, like, dressing up because of the red carpet.
And
now that we're going to, you know, more red carpet events and whatnot, he showed me how to appreciate myself a little more, you know, because I never treated myself.
Right.
Well, if you want to treat yourself, Mark is about to explain a way you can smell good and attract.
Thank you, Nicole. It's hard to get back to the plug, but yes, if you want to smell great like Steven, or you want to, I mean, Sin, you love a man that smells great.
Yes.
There's nothing sexier than a great smelling man. If you want to smell great, go get some Tactical Soap. That is our other sponsor, Tactical Soap. They have three. Look, Joe's getting excited.
I'm like,
they have
yes.
three types of soap: Durden, Bond, and Maverick.
Nice.
Yeah, right.
And they have three different variations of the three: pheromone infused soap.
Yeah, we need more pheromones.
Oh yes, yeah, you need pheromones. Sin needs pheromones too. So yeah, go get some Tactical Soap. There's a code in the description. You get the. You can get your own Tactical Soap and smell good, and the men and the ladies will just be all over you. They got lotions. They have other stuff.
Cool too. Like it's like the male icons of the last 20 years.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. So Sin, I can't delay it any longer. Nicole wants to talk to her about feet. So.
Yay! I want to know about Foot Night. We've been discussing this before the show, so I guess I can't come to Foot Night unless I model, and I'm not sure I'm ready to make that commitment. But tell me what Foot Night would be
you
like.
Can come as a model, but then not do sessions.
Oh, okay. All right.
But you have to.
You have to show your feet
somehow.
I don't mind showing my feet.
You don't have to actually. You don't have to show your feet.
Okay.
I've gone to Foot Night in full on sneakers and socks.
Okay.
Oh, nice and smelly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I actually had someone who was paying me $100 for some stinky socks, but I had to wear them like 4 or 5 days in a row.
Mm.
Interesting. So.
Ooh, they must have. They must have reeked. Yeah.
See, I'm foot curious. Like, I don't have a problem with feet. I want to know more about this world.
Okay, so as a model of Foot Night, there's several different options of things that you can participate in. The clients come in and they're after, like, when people are like, oh, I just have a foot fetish. I'm like, that's a whole umbrella of things. What is it about feet? Do you like worshiping? Do you like smelling them? Do you like tickling them?
Yes.
Like,
yes. Yes. Yes.
Do you like being stepped on or trampled by them?
Yes.
Do you like being kicked by them?
Yes.
Like, what is your thing? And that's kind of what I ask before I go into session.
I'm kidding, Joe. You're like, say that. Go ahead.
Because if I'm doing anything with trampling, I want to make sure I have somewhere to kind of brace myself and hold onto a wall or something like that.
Oh, as a Sin, can you show your feet? Because they're beautiful. I know that you wore some open toes.
I wore a
flip-flop. Look at that. Oh, look. Yeah, more flip flops, and I really appreciate it. I see you're as flexible as ever.
Yes.
I'm not going to show my feet, but we have the same nail polish.
Oh, yeah.
Yay!
Oh, wow. Look at those feet. Oh, yeah. Those get, look at it. Oh. Now, if people are into scrunchy, like, what is the thing? I don't get the scrunchy
thing.
They
like thing. The wrinkles. They like all the wrinkles.
Look at all those.
And some people like a good
see, this is interesting to me because, like, I don't have a strong feeling about it one way or the other.
Some people like arches.
Oh, trust me.
I want to know what people want.
And it really varies because some people are like, well, I don't have really cute toes. I'm like, dude, my left foot has a huge bunion on it.
But guys like the bunions.
Some people fucking love that. Some people like the second toe longer than the big toe. Like, you never know. I've had clients who wouldn't session with me because I'm wearing this color polish.
Okay. Mm.
So everyone has their own kind of thing.
When did you know that you had feet that people like really liked?
I think it was like 19 or 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, because prior to that, I was because
the rest of you is so beautiful. I could never get to the feet.
For me, I always covered my feet for the very like longest time because when I was growing up, I was told that because again, I'm adopted, so I grew up with an adopted sister who not biological related at all, no blood, and she has short feet and small little toes. I was a size like 8.5 when I was like fucking 12.
I'm a size 9.
Yeah, so. I'm a 9 now, but I was like big feet when I was
young. You have bigger feet when you're tall.
And I have like long toes too. So she was like, oh, you got ugly monkey feet. You got ugly monkey feet.
Damn.
So it made me very insecure about my feet. I did not show them for the longest time. I started dancing, always wore closed-toed shoes, never showed them. Dated a guy who had a foot fetish. You got beautiful feet.
Oh, okay.
Maybe about a year later, dated another guy who had a foot fetish. Dated a guy who had an armpit fetish. Get to a point where I'm just like, okay, I'm confident with my feet and barefoot and strappy shoes and flip flops and whatnot.
And your armpits.
And my armpits, yeah.
Isn't it funny how like the things that maybe someone teased you then become your assets growing up?
For real.
They used to call me Toucan Sam growing up, and like I'm now I wouldn't know what to do without my nose. My nose is like my thing, you know.
Yeah.
I love my nose.
Yeah. But you have a foot fetish too, Joe. I could see, like, you're really getting into this.
I can't talk about that other side of me. But I have a world of experience in all this stuff you're talking about.
That, I love it.
Yeah, it was 4 kinky perverts in the studio.
I have had sessions where we do multiple sessions with other models, where it's just like one or two of us.
Mm-hmm.
There is this one client who comes in, and we love sessioning with him because usually at the end of the night, he loves doing a big pile. So he actually had his birthday about a month and a half ago, and there was 12 of us. So wow. He was just laying there, and all 12 of us had our feet all over him. He was just like,
all over his face, all over his body, all over his.
So going into Foot Night as a model, it kind of reminds me a lot of dancing, as far as like you got to sit there and chit chat and mingle, introduce yourself, give yourself a time limit.
Yeah.
And if they're not interested in modeling with you, then just kind of move on. It's kind of up to you. You are allowed to say, oh, no, I'm not going to. No, I'm good right now. If you don't want to model with certain people, you don't have to. There's no pressure. Coming in as a client, there is an abundance of various different types of models to choose from. Mm-hmm. We have like Amazon women, BBW.
Mm-hmm.
I did a Foot Night a couple weeks ago with someone who wore a size fucking 4. I mean, her feet were so teeny tiny. Oh. I was like, oh my God. I was like, they're so little.
Joe's getting the, wait a second.
Tiny feet are so, it's just like, how is that holding your body up?
I know, she's not competing with you.
No, it's no competing at all. A lot of us models get along. A lot of us have to work with.
But I mean, she's got a different audience than you do, because she's got tiny feet.
There's a base pay to get in, as mm-hmm. far as coming in as attendance or a client,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
And after that, it's $20 per 10-minute session.
Mm.
So
explain what a 10-minute session is typically. Or is there a typical one?
It depends on the client, really. It depends on the client, honestly. I've had 10-minute sessions where...
A foot massage?
I just like sit there and hold my feet up, and they just like just want to just put my feet on the face and just...
With a size 4 foot, can't they put their entire...
Probably.
But
the first thing that went to my mind was
like, the whole foot.
They were so tiny.
No, I mean, is there toe sucking in allowed?
Toe sucking. Okay. That's why I usually kind of ask them what they're looking for first. You know, I don't mind worship toe sucking.
Massaging.
Massaging is usually my favorite. So we do get a small portion of people that come in who are submissives.
Right.
So they usually
say.
They usually, not all of them, honestly, but they'll usually ask you, well, what do you want? I'm like, well, I want a foot and calf massage. That's what I really want, you know? That's not always the case, but I've been doing it for, I want to say, almost a decade now. I've been doing it for a minute.
You got old school feet.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about the snacks. That's what we want to know.
And the free pizza.
Oh, yeah. They have food. They have drink. It's BYOB, so they have, like, mixers and water and stuff, and they have snacks and stuff like that. And I think at 9 p.m. they usually have pizza or some form of food to feed people.
How many people usually come out?
It depends on how big the venue is. I know the L.A. ones can get fairly large, about 40, maybe 50 models. So you're thinking about maybe almost double as far as people attending.
That's fascinating.
A lot of people, because if they start at the one here in LA starts at 7 p.m. and ends at midnight. So a lot of people go straight from work and then just get ready. So a lot of people skip dinner.
Yeah.
I know. I personally do. So when they do have food and stuff there, that really helps me. And I'm also hypoglycemic, so I have to eat something every few hours.
And how much foot splashing happens?
Splashing? Very.
Right, because they have food. Are you like?
Oh, very, very rare. Not a lot. There has been a few times where I've done sessions where I've had like they've fruit or strawberries. Yeah. I grabbed strawberries with one client years ago. Oh, hold on. I took a bite of the strawberry and then I like mashed it in between my toes.
Mmm.
And then I held the strawberry in my toes. I'm like, here. And then I started just feeding them strawberries.
That's amazing.
With my feet.
Oh, man.
I'm
so hungry for strawberries
anytime,
now.
Anytime we had sessioned after that at a Foot Night, he's like, oh, wait, let's do a session, but let me go grab some strawberries real quick. I'm like, oh, okay, I got you. Yeah, no, we're good.
Next time you're on the show, I'm going to go to the produce section and, Get some yummy strawberries.
Well, I like to splash and.
I know you do. I know you do. That's why.
I heard about somebody paid $200 to walk on a cake, and I'm like, I could do that.
Well, Sin ate a cake on the show with her feet.
Yeah, I forgot. What was it?
That was the first anniversary show. Nine years ago. It was great.
That's hard. I don't have those kind of skills, but I could step on a cake.
Now, could you teach Nicole those skills?
It's really hard, Like
it is really hard.
A lot of stretching.
I'm like no way.
Hard. I have the reason why I'm flexible is because I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Right. I think I remember you said that on the show.
Yeah.
So and you're still as flexible.
Well, that's the reason why. Because Ehlers-Danlos, mm-hmm. there's like so many different types, but I have the hypermobile type, which means I don't have collagen in my joints.
Mm. Oh, damn.
Which is why my body doesn't stop where most people's bodies stop.
Oh!
Makes sense.
So I can literally look like I'm breaking my arm, but I have full use of everything.
Yeah.
And I have like joints that hyperextend, that go beyond.
Mm.
Same thing with both my thumbs.
Right.
And yeah. So
wow.
Yeah, my elbows, my shoulders, my hips, my jaw. So it's the
your jaw as well?
Yeah, it's the EDS. I can kind of like unhinge it and kind of like move it forward. Yeah.
My wheels are turning as one of possibilities.
It's like a really deep stretch. It doesn't feel like anything weird. But then when I see someone like videotape it and play that back, I'm like, oh, what the fuck? Oh, but when I'm doing it, I'm just like, oh, this feels nice.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I told you, Joe, the most interesting person in the world is in the studio with you.
I just worked with a man who was on, I guess, America's Got Talent. He's a contortionist.
Mm-hmm.
Black man?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's super, super springy, jump in a backman. Oh, yeah. My God. Yes, yes.
I worked with him. Tournament.
Yeah.
Walk upside down.
And yeah, no, he is, his flexibility is just out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love.
And that's coming from you, which your flexibility is out of control.
Like, I have flexibility in certain areas of my body, but not everywhere. So,
yeah.
I'm a forward bender. I'm not a backward bender.
Ah.
And I love watching backward bending contortionists.
Yeah.
I love watching people be able to do certain things that my body physically can't do, or I haven't learned the skill yet.
Right.
And seeing that man's flexibility, I saw him on America's Got Talent. I saw his little thing that he did too for Monster Plus. I'm not sure if it was last year or the last couple years. But it was amazing.
That
yeah.
is mind
yeah.
blowing.
Yeah. He's really good.
He brings that to life with his contortionism.
Yeah. Right.
Amazing.
Yeah. Right. And I was gonna go from the feet to you actually directed. You're in the Guinness Book of World Records for directing the movie with the most kills.
My husband Steven Escobar and I, we have the Guinness Book of World Record for the highest body count in a slasher movie.
See, I was looking at this and it was like 151. That seems low.
It's 155 on-screen kills.
Okay,
but it's a specific category. It's in a slasher movie. It's not like Lord of the Rings where they like kill everyone.
It's Schindler's List. Reach out.
Yeah, very specific. And it's for a movie that I produced and directed. Titled The Summer of Massacre.
Yes.
So, and the movie's like 98 minutes long, so 155 kills. This is like literally, there's literally like sometimes there's like three or four kills in a minute.
Yeah.
And they're all, it's a very graphic film. If you do not like blood and you do not like killing, do not watch the film.
Well, it's our audience. They love that. So I'm sure they'll love the
target audience.
The Summer of Massacre.
Summer of Massacre.
Wow.
You can get it right now on Vimeo. Or you can also get it at terrortoons.tv.
Right.
And we made the movie in 2012. It was the most pirated film for 2 months in a row on YouTube.
I heard about that.
We could not get it off YouTube.
Yeah.
We could not, and the distributor that we were working with at the time, every day there were like three of us like trying to get it down, pull it down off YouTube. It would go up and we'd get people taking it down, but... It was kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time.
It got the word out, but
it was pirated every place. And we're getting ready to actually do an entire brand new digital pass on the film. We're going to re-release it, and I'm going to add another giant body count to it, and we're going to beat our record.
Good. So
I invite all of you to come and be in the film and be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
I'm into it.
Yeah, we're all into it.
You gotta promise me. You can do that.
Okay, so I've had this weird fantasy.
Okay. Oh, well, here we go.
Being in a horror movie and somehow, I don't know, some type of fall, whether it's falling down the stairs or whatever, and my bones and everything is just like, I'm just a contorted mess.
Okay, good. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay,
I recently saw the movie Old, and this is a spoiler, but there is a terrible scene where she breaks all of her bones and they heal back in the wrong place. So she's just like all chopped up in a kind of canyon. So when you said that, I was picturing that, but cooler.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
Because that was all CGI. You'd be the real thing.
Yeah.
Have you?
Well, I've
done contortion.
I've done CGI.
Oh, really?
It's a CGI character for a small movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And did you, did that involve contortions or?
Yeah. So it was called Hex the Movie.
Okay.
And it was filmed in Cambodia probably about 6 or 7 years ago. Okay. And I was the CGI entity, character, whatever. So mm-hmm. a woman purchased or has some type of item while traveling overseas. It possesses her. Mm. And they have to do this sacred ritual to kind of like exorcise the demon out of her.
Yeah.
I'm the demon. So there's like in one scene... You see, like, shadows coming down the stairs, and it's all, like, creepy, contorty and stuff like that. But then when she actually comes in the scene, she's just, like, normal and whatever. So there's, like, little, like, things that kind of, like...
That's pretty cool.
...come in and kind of give off the hint that something's just not right. And at one point, they do have her kind of, like, tied onto her knees, and they're, like, shouting these things, and... at one point, I have to come in and fill in for her, and I fall forward. And if you've ever seen The Ring, you know how she does her crawl where she throws it like over her shoulder and mm-hmm. moves forward.
Right.
Well, I'm doing that.
Oh, wow.
And then I stand up, and I think I like force choke. I like grab a guy and I force choke him up into the air and like slam him into a wall. And
oh,
I've only seen like stills of the actual movie. I haven't seen it mm-hmm. itself, but mm-hmm. It is me. And I think 2 or 3 separate times they do feature my tongue.
So
now it's me.
Well, that's your signature.
My signature, yes.
I mean, and it's funny because, I knew you before the split tongue, and did I? When did
no,
you get the split tongue?
Yeah, did. Yeah, because I did split tongue.
Is this like, oh, okay.
Like 3 days after I came back from Dubai. Which
right,
was like
right, I remember
6
that.
6 or 7 years
yeah.
ago. But I've been... I want to say it's been about 10 years since and I think my first podcast I ever did was on your show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember being so fucking nervous, too, and I think I ended up twerking or something like that.
Well, yeah, you know, it's just my show, but, because, I mean, we knew you before the breast implants, and then you had one tongue, but it's, the split tongue's fun, and I've actually kissed a woman with a split tongue, and that's nice, and...
I have a former partner who also had a split tongue,
right.
So that was fun.
Oh,
right.
Wow, yeah.
And they move independently.
Yeah, that's
great, so... Like so if you couldn't be hot enough with the contortion, the feet, the beautiful. Now you got a split tongue, and it's.
I love being able to modify. Our bodies are so fascinating to me. Like the way we're able to like modify, pierce it, tattoo it, stretch skin, like mm-hmm. cut things up.
Cut things up.
Well, your tongue is a muscle.
Right,
you're
right.
Cutting it in half.
Okay, all right.
The face is super fascinating, especially this area of a human's face.
And your mouth heals so fast.
Right. Well, also, if you think about it, like your lips in this area of your
face. There's so many nerve endings.
It's very similar to your genitals.
Yeah.
It's just it's another orifice.
Well, yeah,
right?
Like the skin on your lips is just as sensitive and delicate as the skin down there.
Well,
but I went to one time for one character in The Summer Massacre. I'm actually in The Summer Massacre as one of the killers in the film. And I'm supposed to be a man who's been burned onto another person.
Oh, shit.
And it healed. And we're two killers that are literally burnt together. And, we're
Siamese twins by fire.
What happened was we're two firefighters that were out with a group of firefighters. And it's commonly known that firefighters are very anti-gay.
Oh, wow.
Oh, interesting.
So,
interesting, because that's a big gay fetish.
Well, in the story, the firefighting team found out that two of the men on the team were lovers, and they intentionally tricked them into being in a part of it and hit what a fire was. They knew they would be burned alive.
Yeah.
And so when we were burnt together, and we come back to seek revenge on all these people.
Oh, that is awesome.
There you go.
I'm surprised at that because I did comedy at a gay bar in Victorville, and it was firehouse themed. Isn't that like a fetish? I mean, isn't that like an archetype?
I don't know about that, but I do know...
I know more about the gay community than you.
I've been told that it's commonly known that firefighters are very anti-gay.
Wow.
I'm sure some are, but, you know.
So in
anti-gay slash
in the film,
closet homophobes.
Most anti-gay people are closet homophobes.
So when we were talking about the face and how like sensitive the face is, or how interesting the face is again. So I had to be a burned killer, and I wanted my lip to be like this, you know, burning people. So I super glued my lip to my chin. Because I knew
this is before he had the beard, I would assume.
No, absolutely. But I super glued my lip to my chin because I couldn't get it to stay down with glue. So I said, you know, what's going to happen? Nothing happened at all. I was able to glue it down. It worked perfectly, and I was able to undo it. And,
right.
But yeah, the face is fascinating. Yeah.
Speaking of faces, now you had posted yesterday, because it was July 4th, that one of your first big things was you did the makeup for Uncle Sam.
I worked with a team of people.
Yes.
I can't take full credit for
it. The Bill Lustig movie.
Yes, Uncle Sam. Like, isn't that like one of the only, the 4th of July horror films besides Return of the Living Dead?
I watched some of it last night. I didn't get through the whole thing.
Uncle Sam?
Uncle Sam, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's an iconic mask that the killer in that movie wears.
Right.
And it's like a kind of a witchy looking face, you know, Caucasian old man, Uncle Sam face. And
like scary Uncle Sam.
Yeah, scary Uncle Sam.
Is scary.
And, I didn't know.
Funny you should say that. When I was a kid, I played Uncle Sam in the school pageant when I was in elementary school, because I was like the only white kid in the class. But no, go ahead. So,
well, I was just saying that, you know, you never know what from your, you know, what you're working on, how it's going to be perceived in the world. No one knew that cheesy Halloween mask that I made, or that, you know, that I got a chance to work on, was going to become this iconic symbol, you know.
Right. So, because you were posting, you said that they thought, oh, you can make it cheap.
They're like, give it to Joe to do. His work is cheap. He can make a cheap Halloween mask, you know. Just give it to Joe, you know.
And now it's in every Halloween shop ever.
Yeah, now it's the most iconic thing about the film that everybody loves. And yeah. The same thing happened with, I worked with Herschel Gordon Lewis, who was actually the man that invented splatter movies, basically.
Blood Feast
back in 1963. He wrote, directed, produced, filmed, and actually created all the special effects and composed all the music for the film.
Wow.
So he was like one of the true innovators of independent film.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to work on Blood Feast 2. And I don't know where I was going with the story. But basically...
Well, you were humble bragging. We got that.
Well, you know, the Herschel, you know, we're talking about the Herschel... The same people that threw me the cheap Halloween mask turned down working with Herschel on that film because there wasn't enough money. Like, give it to Joe, you know. He don't know what to do with it. It ain't got much money. It'll just be whatever. And that turned out to be like one of the most pivotal points in my career.
That's
so, like, all these amazing things have happened
simply
because someone was kind of like throwing away a great opportunity or wanting to see me fail. They were like, oh,
well, you know, that's, I hate to mention it, but that's how I booked you on this podcast. I'm like, just give it to Joe. Joe will come down. He'll have some stories. Whatever.
So, but I've been very grateful. I'm very grateful that happened. All these incidents, as I look back over my career, I realize that I've been like, you know, I've had angels watching me the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I've had these people in my life that have influenced me, like my cousins, mm-hmm, that saw that I was a troubled.
Your cousins, Steven.
Steven.
But I mean, Terror Tunes is really what you're known for. And I didn't know there was such a cult around Terror Tunes.
The Terror Tunes, and that's spelled T-O-O-N-S. People think it's T-U-N-E-S. Right. It's not. It's T-O,
like Looney Tunes.
Like cartoons. Yeah, Terror Tunes. And, you know, it's this beloved film that my husband and I made back in 2001.
And pretty cheaply.
We shot the entire movie in 3 days over Easter weekend,
mm-hmm,
for $2,300.
Wow.
And when it was released on video... it sat on the shelf right next to Pirates of the Caribbean, Blockbuster.
No, it was in all the Blockbusters. So you actually made quite a profit on that movie because Blockbuster picked it up.
Yeah, Blockbuster picked it up. We shot the movie. The budget was originally $2,500, and I came in under budget.
That's great.
Just give it to Joe. He'll do it cheap.
Yeah. He knows it.
Yeah, he'll do it cheap.
And we were able to move 50,000 units in the first 2 weeks.
That's
for
awesome.
$3.33 a unit.
Well, let me do the math there. that's a good return on $2,500.
That was just the first 2 weeks, and then
we
sold it to different countries. It was released in Germany and France and the UK and Australia, and then Netflix picked it up. Also, what was the other one? Hollywood Video.
I remember Hollywood Video.
Picked it up, and then Blockbuster did a second run like 2 years later.
Wow.
So it was.
So there's no Blockbuster. There's no Hollywood now. Now how do you make money?
Well, we have the fan base, and, you know, it's like Terror Tunes is this one-of-a-kind thing that you can only get from us.
Right.
It's like, you know, where else are you going to get a movie about how the devil makes these evil cartoon characters that for the sole purpose of murdering children?
Mm.
in cartoon waves. Right. In cartoon waves. But, you know, each film is different. There's four of them now.
Right.
And I wanted to make a film, first of all, that included everybody. Like, I always have it, like, either, like a gender-fluid individual in the film. I always have, like, a trans person in the film. I always reverse the roles. I have strong female leads in roles that normally are portrayed by male characters, mm-hmm. and vice versa, because I just want something different. You know, it's like eating an interesting pizza, you know, yep. right?
At Foot Night.
At Foot Night, yeah. So and that's the way I would, you know, so each Terror Toons film, 1, 2, 3, and 4, each one of them is like a different film, and has and each one has like a different kind of fan.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. The first.
So there's like Terror Toons, and then Terror Toons 2 people, and Terror Toons 3 people.
Yes.
We saw Terror Toons 4. That's the only one I've seen.
Terror Toons 4 is like the most like mainstream one of them all.
You kind of
soften up a little bit, you know.
So it's mainstream Terror Toons.
Mainstream. Yeah. The first one's very dark. It's primarily slasher and gore. Mm-hmm. The second one is like more of a PG-13 soft R, you know.
Okay.
A lighthearted right. film.
More tunes than terror.
More tunes than terror, yes. More John Waters.
Okay.
Than Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Got it.
The third one is a complete like nightmare fueled. If you like to get stoned and watch horror films, this film will give you nightmares.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, if you're stoned, yeah.
Yeah, sends in for that. Like, yeah.
Really cringy, dark.
So I think Sin's a Terror Toons 3 person.
Yeah, Terror Toons
3. I'm probably a Terror Toons 2 person. Uh-huh. And who likes the Terror Toons 4? Because that just came out.
Terror Toons 4 has its first. It's like really, it really opens up to like all, celebrates all kind of sexual, you know.
Maybe I'm a Terror Toons 4 person. I don't know.
All sexual desires. And I tell you, what happens is when you make a movie where you try to be very all encompassing.
Right.
People are going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to not like it. Even if there's one thing about it that they disagree with, they're going to be like, mm-mm-mm. But, you know, that's how I like my pizza, you know?
Right. Yeah. So Terror Toons 4 was the sexual Terror Toons.
It is. There's a scene where, and I've always wanted to do this, and I was hoping by the time it took us 10 years to make Terror Toons 4.
Right. No, I know.
And I was hoping by the time we got to the release that someone wouldn't have done it. And I always wanted to do a scene where two drunk men straight men kind of flirting with the idea of trying something fun and new. One of them vomits.
Remember the scene.
They're out of alcohol, so one of them vomits into the other one's mouth to get him drunk, and then they take turns sharing vomit and urine to get even more drunk.
I remember the scene, yes. This is coming back to me now.
I read a book called Some Fucked Up Shit, and that feels like that should be in some fucked up shit.
But it's also done very cartoon-like.
I'm trying to think about, have I done anything darker than that? Because I do a lot of dark shit, and that's pretty...
Vomit, piss, anything like that?
I do a scene where a ghost rips their tits off and shoves it into a person.
I read that.
Yes. But I think that's the only thing I got that's close. I think you beat me.
Right.
I tried to make it light and fun, though. Like it was kind of cartoon.
No, it was funny. It was kind of like a.
I need to up my bodily fluids game.
No, it was honestly, it was kind of like a Porky's American Pie gone very wrong.
Oh, I love it.
That's what I thought when I watched that.
You know,
but so you're into some kinky stuff.
I mean, that story was there's like I kind of reinvented myself about 8 years ago.
Oh, really?
And I don't want to go into too much detail, but yeah, I finally began following the path that made me the man I am today.
Okay.
Man I really wanted to be.
All
sometimes
right.
it takes people a long time to figure what that is.
Right? All right. So what is that?
The man you see here. Basically, and I think we had this conversation before I came into the studio, you know, upholding the honor and grace and respect for the men and women in my life today that have shaped me to be who I am right now.
Yeah.
You know, There are, I don't know if you know Brink Stevens, the Scream
Queen. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, no, I know Brink.
I've known Brink since I was 15 years old.
And love Brink.
She is closer to me than anyone in my family, and she has absolutely shaped and molded me to be the man I am today.
And Brink is very sexy in Terror Tunes.
Oh, she's a staple in the Terror Tunes franchise. Yes. And I gave my partner, my husband, and I gave Brink her first her directorial debut. She directs a portion of Terror Tunes 4. You know, after being in over 200 films, I'm like, why isn't this woman directed a feature film? Why did she direct something?
I just met her. We did a scene where I played a pervy prison guard, and she was a fellow prison guard. So we met, and then we hit it off since then. She's great.
I love working with female directors, by the way. Mm-hmm. So and the reason why I like working with female directors is because they always have a very fresh perspective on something that could be very simple.
Right. Nice.
And whenever they ask me to do something, it's way outside my toolbox, and I love that. And right. Who doesn't love a challenge, especially as an artist?
Right. By the way, I missed the segue, because you said that Terror Tunes was a 3 or 2 that you get high and you watch that?
Yeah, maybe even Terror Tunes 4 a little bit. I was actually, we had a screening of it at a horror film festival recently, and I'm not going to say who it was, but there was a very famous actor was sitting next to me in the screening, and he said, Joe, I'm high as a kite and I'm tripping balls right now. you don't have to be high in order to watch it, but I know that because of this kind of like simple dark undertone with this cartoon, it can really bend someone's mind if they're not in the right frame of mind.
But bring out another flavor.
Yeah. But if you want to get high, go to renegadecbd.com and get your CBD needs. They've got white chocolate. They've got gummies. They've got all sorts of stuff. Get your bath bombs, too.
And when they bring out the next batch, I will review it and try it out.
Maybe and watch Terror Tunes, too.
Yeah.
I would love that. I like watching people's faces when they watch the film.
Oh, no. Well, that's what's great about comedy is that when people are high, you watch them. I did a show in Denver. I saw somebody about the show in Denver. I did. This is right when they first started legalizing weed, and everybody was just high. It was just so great to watch people get high. And God, you know, where does the time go? Every time Sin is here, the time goes by so fast. But we got to go back to you because we're talking about fetishes. Now, we've talked about you. You are involved in so many fetish communities. Now, what do you like? What is your fetish?
I, oddly enough.
Or are you vanilla underneath
it
all?
No, I'm definitely not vanilla. I firmly believe that everybody has a body part fetish.
A body part fetish?
Yes. Whether it's tits, ass, legs,
feet,
back, biceps, what have you. Mine is hands.
Mine really?
Too. Mine are hands. And with men, I like very veiny hands and forearms. And with women, I love very long, bony fingers and wow. long, witchy fingernails.
Okay.
So with women, I like the witchy hands.
Yeah.
But with men, I just fucking veins. So it really kind of varies. But hands are definitely like one of my top body parts.
Yeah, I like hands. I like gloves on hands.
I gotta get some veins. No, I'm actually starting to get...
I fully understand the whole body part fetish, you know.
I also have a thing, this is going to sound weird, but I have a thing for eyebrows. Like, I like, if your eyebrows suck, I don't have a thing for you. Like, it's
so, what's a good eyebrow and not a good eyebrow?
I mean, I don't know, like, I just...
No unibrow, I got that, but...
Yeah, like, well, I mean, I think every guy should maintain their eyebrows a little bit, because, like, if the girl unruly, it just looks bad. Like, it looks like you don't care about your face. Like, I have a natural brow, and I've been keeping the natural brow. I like a good, strong brow that's, like, natural on a guy. And on a girl, I like it to be, like, kind of arching a little. Well, I don't know how to describe it.
Do you like when guys cock the eyebrow like I'm doing right now?
Well, you have a lot of hair in front of your eyebrow.
That'd be a no. So,
Because you got the cool new haircut, and so, unfortunately, it goes right across your brow.
All right, well, look.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. So you're into veiny hands.
Well, I was gonna piggyback off that and say I've been contemplating getting my eyebrows microbladed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting tired definitely...
of having to draw them on.
Well, it started with the Labyrinth.
Yeah.
It started with Jareth from the Labyrinth. It was just David Bowie, and David Bowie's like the perfect androgynous male. So of course I had a crush on him for forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I really like eyebrows.
Right.
Isn't that when they actually put a needle in underneath your skin and pull it and shape it?
Microblading.
Is that what it is?
No. It's like a semi-permanent tattoo your eyebrows.
Okay.
I would. Me, I mean, I you have don't very, have to change have, a thing on your face, but I like them just.
Well,
a
these
little
are
bit,
all painted on.
I would go just a little bit thicker because it'll really enhance.
I would love that. I'm not that great when it comes to doing like a really good perfect arch brow.
It's
and
hard.
I've had makeup artists.
It looks pretty
my
good.
Really
yeah, no,
good.
That's what I'm saying. They look really good. You don't have to change them, but I would.
But
if with
I
your
do
eyes,
when I do a microblading because I have very thin and very light eyebrows.
And with
so.
Your native heritage, I think a yeah. thicker eyebrow on you would look really sexy.
Yeah.
I know women that actually tattoo their lip liner as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Look at us giving
here.
You advice how to be sexy,
about that
Sin.
On the way over here, and I was like, I don't know if I could do like a lip tattoo. That's like we're saying. It's like the genitals. It's like it's so sensitive
it
and tender.
Isn't there a new form of tattoo that goes away after 2 years? I've heard
but
of
why
it.
Would you want to go through all of that just for it to go away after 2 years?
Exactly.
All my tattoos I thought about. I drew most of them. So like I'm proud of my tattoos. I don't want them to go away.
Sam, do you have any new tattoos? I'm trying to I've been scanning your body to see if there's anything new.
I've got some new ones on my back.
Oh, I like that.
Cool. Yeah, I like that a lot.
On both sides.
Oh, show Joe your autopsy tattoo.
Yes.
That's
my
so
lion
cool.
incision.
Yes.
Yeah, I need to get more.
Okay, well, you're back in LA, so you'll get some more.
Maybe August, maybe September, right there.
Yeah.
So I guess we could finish off with this. How is it being back in LA? Because you were gone. I mean, we missed you.
Yeah,
it feels good. It feels good. I was in Arizona for just about, I was there for a year, and then for the last like half year, I've been kind of back and forth. But it feels good to be back.
Yeah.
Now,
why did you leave and why are you back?
I left out there. I'm going to make this real quick. My adopted mom passed away.
Oh, okay.
And my adopted parents had been together for 56 years.
Wow.
And I did not want my dad to be alone for the whole first
year
by himself. Because what people don't realize is that when you're with someone that long, you develop a codependency.
Absolutely,
you
yes.
cannot be
Joel
able to
tell
make
you.
Your fucking thoughts.
Yeah.
And some people do die shortly after of heartbreak or whatever.
Literally.
So... I had the opportunity to stay at my parents' second house, and I took the opportunity to kind of get restabilized after COVID,
mm-hmm.
kind of took all of my savings away from me to keep housing. And out there, considering I was in the middle of fucking nowhere,
yes.
I was like, this would be a perfect place for me to learn how to drive again. So because of that, I got my driver's license, and so I've been driving, which is great. About 15 years ago, I was hit by a car while on the back of a motorcycle, so I didn't drive for a very long time because of that. So very grateful. Middle of nowhere, no traffic, no car. So now I'm driving in LA. I'm used to it, but it was a good first step for me to be out there. And being there for my father during Christmas, Thanksgiving, his birthday, her birthday, their mm-hmm. anniversary,
right.
making sure that we're doing something fun, creating new memories, so he's not just sitting there alone and sad. So after that time had came and passed, I was ready to move on with my life, and being in Arizona was just not going
to
be it.
No,
so.
I don't.
So you're too wild for LA. I can just imagine Arizona.
Well, I was only like about an hour and a half away from Las Vegas. So I was doing some gigs in Vegas, but I figured it's just easier just to come back to a place where I know I have work. Oh, and just to circle back real quick. I volunteer behind the bar, bartending, quote unquote bartending, at a swingers club. Club Joy.
Thanks for bringing that back.
I've been doing that for about the past 6 years. I did that pre-pandemic.
And I read that it's LA's youngest swingers club.
There's so many couples of many different ages. Me and my partner right now are, I guess if you want to put a label on, are monogamous, but we developed from a polyamorous relationship. And you know, we go there and we play and we hang out.
Nice.
People always assume that if you go to a swing club, it's automatically just full swap, and that's not the case. People are voyeurs, exhibitionists.
Yeah.
People go there to explore their bisexuality.
Yeah.
And some people just go there to treat it as an after-hours club. So everyone that goes there has a different dynamic.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But I've been working there, I volunteer for the past 6 years. And even while I was in Arizona, I said, I don't want to not work here anymore. So
Oh, cool.
Once a month, every time I came to LA, I would work it with my with the owner of Club Joy to be able to come and volunteer for a shift.
Right.
So now that I'm back behind the bar every Saturday. And if you're interested in coming out and swinging or experimenting or watching others, definitely check out clubjoy.com. Clubjoi.
Right.
.com.
Jerk off instructions.
Yes. So membership is there. So you have to sign up for membership, and then there's an entry fee to get in. But that covers DJ, music, entertainment. They have a costume stripper costume contest at midnight every night, and we work behind the
bar. Taking notes.
Couldn't
be that much of a costume if it's a stripper contest.
Well, you know, getting naked really helps. So really cool club to work at to be at. And I'm usually there from midnight until closing, which is 5 a.m. on Saturdays because it is BYOB. They follow the law and everything and the coordinates and stuff like that.
Bring your own balls.
You feel more comfortable naked in public than you do with your clothes on.
I'm still very reserved when I'm behind the bar working there.
Right.
So like if I'm wearing something see-through, I usually wear pasties or tape or something. Well,
yeah, but I'm just saying more undressed than dressed. Like for instance, I would go out. I
mean, well, was there a time that you were more comfortable undressed than dressed?
I mean, I think it was more sluttier when I was a stripper.
Yeah. Would you didn't have to do anything with you being younger?
No, I think just when I'm a stripper, I just let her.
It took me a long time to get comfortable being naked.
But you had to see her.
Yeah.
My God, the moves that she could do. It defied the logic.
Yeah.
You used to do a move where you would put yourself upside down, put your feet on the ceiling, and stay there.
The Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
Amazing.
No, that stripper move was actually given to me by a dancer who had retired. Thank you, Paula. And I've always admired that move that she did. And she's like, I'm retiring from dancing. And
but I remember.
I just want to let you know that you can have the Spider-Man move. Oh, nice. And I was like, yes!
Nice.
So, yeah, I climb up the pole and I go upside down and I stand on the ceiling and I'm kind of like.
And stays like there, just like bam! Yeah. And it's like, Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing you and, I was
totally with Spider-Woman, Spider-Man, Black Widow was a nickname that one customer had for me. But like a lot of my movements are very like creepy, crawly.
Yeah.
Spidery. My target audience is scare aroused. Like you get a weird, uncomfortable boner and you don't know why.
That's how I write my sex scenes in horror. Because I want you to feel like, I want you to go, I'm a little guilty that I like this, but I like this. Yeah.
There's nothing better than an uncomfortable boner. And
exactly.
I love it.
Nothing
and I have one right now. And I have one right now. We could talk to you guys all night, but Sin, tell everybody what you got going on and how they can get a hold of you. And do you still have an OnlyFans?
I do have an OnlyFans. I have an OnlyFans now. And I've had that for about a couple years now. And
it's going to be wilder than any OnlyFans you'll see. You're going to see weird stuff that you've never seen before.
I'm primarily on Instagram, so you can check out my social media, Sin Twisted. And right now I've just been, you know, volunteering behind the bar at Club Joy and then doing foot nights as of now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still getting random bookings here and there, but I am back in LA and I am available. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm. we got to talk to you how you turn polyamory into monogamy, but going out with you, I can see that happening.
Well, I just started off seeing someone who also had other partners, and then I met someone while I was seeing that someone, and then after
and they dropped two friends, and you dropped two friends, and so on and so on and so on.
But we're not exclusive monogamy, and we talk about this kind of constantly. So I'm just like, yeah, if you went out tonight and you came back and was like, oh, I fucking made out with this hot chick. I think the only thing I would be was a little bit jealous that I didn't get to watch it or join in and participate. Let's make this a three-way kiss.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
I got two tongues.
Make a note of that. And Joe, what a treat. And we just barely scratched the surface. We got to have you back soon. I knew you were going to be a great guest from the first time I met you.
Thank you for having me.
And anytime. And tell everybody what you got going on and how they can get a hold of you.
Okay. Well, right now we have Terror Toons 4, which is coming out in Blu-ray and DVD. And you can get all four of the Terror Toons franchise at terrortoons.tv. Also, The Barn 2 is out right now. Getting ready to do the
I missed The Barn 1. What's The Barn 2?
Amazing cult film. The Barn 2 is actually rated number 2 right now on Screenbox, right after Terrifier.
Okay.
So it's right up there. It's a total like classic throwback to the 80s horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Robot Dracula with James Balsamo.
We're all in that.
We're in that movie.
Robot Dracula, right? Making the Robot Dracula.
I play a vampire. I think
I play a vampire.
You play
I think
a vampire.
I'm a vampire in it as well.
We love James Balsamo.
We have The Old Ones, which is coming out by Chad Farron. He also has a movie called Scalper that's out right now, and then Pig Killer with Jake Busey and Bai Ling.
Right.
And then End Zone 2. There's a movie called Ruthless in Vegas. But right now, getting ready to work with the director Marcel Waltz on a brand new werewolf film.
Nice.
And I'm leaving here and going home and making a full body werewolf suit. That's what I've been working on.
As you do.
Yeah. Joe, thanks for being on.
Absolutely.
You were great. And Nicole.
Yeah.
Now, you were just featured in Weird Tales magazine.
I was. It was very exciting. This is their 100-year anniversary.
Right.
That's pretty awesome.
And you're getting the upcoming Robot Dracula.
Mignola, Stephen King. So many great people are featured in that magazine. It was a real honor to be invited to join it.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on at Nicole6Books on Instagram and NicoleH6 on Facebook. And me and the gang were talking while you were getting the cups for us. And there's a new Twitter coming out from Facebook. So I might get on that too.
See what happens when I'm not around. And also pick up Slow Burn.
Your please new pick up my poetry book.
Yes, yes.
Please support the arts.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Support all these arts. Oh, there we go. And I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye.